You're listening to the Inside the Mix podcast with your host, Mark Matthews.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Mix podcast. I'm Mark Matthews, your host, musician, producer, and mix and mastering engineer. You've come to the right place if you want to know more about your favorite synth music artists, music engineering and production, songwriting, and the music industry. I've been writing, producing, mixing, and mastering music for over 15 years, and I want to share what I've learned with you. Hey, folks, and welcome back to the Inside the Mix podcast. If you are a new listener to the podcast, welcome, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. Now, in this episode, slightly different to usual, it's a new format that we've got running today. So I'm very excited to welcome our guest today, my friend Violet. So Violet is a music producer seeking to specialize in synth, metal, and dark synth. I heard metal, or rather red metal there, and it piqued my interest straight away. As the audience knows, I'm a big metalhead. So what we're doing today is what's called a producer kickstart session. So we're going to be digging into some mixing and music production bits and pieces with Violet. Violet, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great today.
Fantastic. And just for our audience listening, can you just let us know where you're joining us from?
I'm a producer from Singapore.
Fantastic. Yeah, I always ask this question because I chat to people all around the globe and it's pretty cool. I should get a map on the wall and put pins in everywhere that I've spoken to people from. Because I'm getting awesome. About now. Yeah, I think I'm going to do that actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could make a note of that. Yeah.
It's just huge.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, that's the great thing about it. You know, I'm chatting with yourself today in Singapore. And I'm chatting with Color Theory later in the States. And then I'm chatting And then I'm chatting with a few others in the UK and someone in the States again. It's fantastic. You get to speak to people all over the place. It's brilliant. So as a producer kickstart session, what I'd like to just dig in first is just a bit about where you're at the moment. So we're going to be focusing on mixing today. So where you're at in terms of your sort of knowledge skill set at the moment with mixing and where you think you would like to be in 6 months?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in terms of where I am with my skill level, I'd say that I can get a mix sounding good enough for the average consumer to just think, you know, hey, this is it sounds pretty standard, I'd say. You wouldn't hear, I don't think at least that any average listener will be complaining about specific issues when they hear it. Nothing's standing out too obviously. There's also this sort of this issue of you being your own biggest critic, and I'm always very critical of my own quality. And I'll always be fussing over the little details did I get the balance right? Is maybe the bass a bit too weak in this or too strong in this? Or am I not, in terms of mastering, it's always an issue for me, which is kind of why I approached you for help for that, actually, for one of my upcoming songs. Yeah. So I guess in 6 months' time, where I'd like to see myself is I'd like to be able to have a mix that I could theoretically be pitching to bigger like record labels and stuff, and be kind of reach that next level of quality where even those with the trained ear will have a hard time discerning any faults of it in a sense. And also possibly reaching a level where I can even, do my own masters at a more professional level.
Yeah, fantastic.
I guess it's
it's great goals, to be honest. And I get what you mean with regards to good enough and being your harshest critic, because I think we all are our harshest critics when it comes to music and music production, And It's a tricky one with a good enough one, because in mixing, it ties in with being your harshest critic in that there has to come a point in mixing where, there is a boundary line where you think, I've got to put this mix to bed now. But at the same time, when you are your harshest critic, it's so hard to do because you're always trying to pick bits and pieces. Is there anything in particular in your mixing, in your productions, that you focus most on when you're criticizing your mixes?
Right. I think like the kind of the biggest issue that I struggle with a lot is actually like handling my bass. I think it has to do with the fact that I don't really have the best equipment when it comes to like audio. Like I don't really have super state-of-the-art headphones or like desktop monitors and things like that. So like I kind of struggle to like really hear the level of my bass as compared to like reference tracks and things like that. And I always find like one song I'll be like mixing the bass too low, and then the next song to compensate for it, like I end up going overboard with it, and it becomes too thick. Yeah, it's something that I'm never really like. I'm always not really happy with how that part sounds.
Yeah, that's one of the trickiest parts, and it kind of leads on nicely rather. So you shared the song sort of vivisection with me, and I've had a listen to it, and the notes I've made are primarily the ones I was going to focus on were going to be in that low end region.
Right.
And with bass, it is really, really tricky. If you haven't got the monitoring environment, monitors, it's hard, because if you've got a home studio, a lot of the time, unless you're quite lucky in terms of you can build your own home studio to a certain specification, you're sort of working with what you have, and you're on not the back foot, but it's quite tricky to kick on from there. And then a good pair of headphones can sometimes help with that. Now, you mentioned there about your headphone situation. If you don't mind me asking, what headphones are you using at the moment?
Oh, gosh. I'm a little bit, like, embarrassed to even, like, mention this. Like, I mix all my songs in, like, a pair of, like, kind of cheap, like, $50 Audio-Technica earphones. Yeah. It's not even a pair of headphones. Yeah. It's I'm trying to like work up the funds to upgrade.
Yeah, I was going to say, you say that, but I remember where I had a friend, and he was mixing using Apple earbuds, and because he got so finely attuned to the frequency response and how they interacted with his music, he was coming out with some fantastic mixes. And it's interesting again that there was a conversation I had with Don Morley in episode 54, whereby we were talking about mixing environments, and he was saying that unless you're in a perfect optimum mixing environment, you adapt to what you have, and you start to learn the intricacies of the frequency responses of what you're using, and then you can create those mixes. So I wouldn't be too perturbed about the fact that you've got the cheaper side of headphones. I still think you can come out with good mixes using them. You've just got to learn to know where there's a peak in the high and the high frequencies, or there's a bump in the low frequencies. You sort of got to learn to tune your ears to use those headphones. So one thing I was going to say with regards to the low end in particular is, now this is a tip I got from, I can't remember the producer's name, but it was something I saw, and he said, so you mentioned that you're using reference tracks. So when you use a reference track, are you doing it by ear, which is great, which is what I'm an advocate for, or are you looking at the frequency content of that reference track as well?
I tend to try to look at the frequency content. And usually, like, I'll use, like, visually, like, the frequency, like, the spectrum as, like, a guideline, but I tend to fall towards just using ear because I sometimes don't trust the visuals.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was going to say then is that's a really good thing to do. So it's great that you're doing that already in terms of you're looking at the frequency content, because there is a limitation to our listening environments if they're not optimum. And sometimes it is good to use a reference EQ and see, okay, so this is a professional radio friendly track, and I can see that particular bass region, whatever it may be. I don't know. You've got 80, 90, 100 hertz. I can see there's a bump there. So I'm going to try and match that. Obviously, what I wouldn't say is use something like Match EQ and just match it like verbatim, because that's probably not going to work. It's not the ideal thing to do. But it's great that you're doing that already, because that's what I would say you need to do. So with regards to your bass, how are you sort of interplaying with the kick drum? Are you carving out space for the kick in the bass frequencies and vice versa? Is that something that you do?
I do like sidechain my kick drum, but the way that I do it, which probably isn't the best method, is I literally side chain it to like the whole bus of everything else. So everything ducks down when the kick comes in. I just personally like how that sounds. I don't know if that's like more damaging to my mix or not.
So just to clarify that, so are you side chaining your kick to every instrument, or are you side chaining your kick just to the bass?
We'll be right back.
Ever felt the frustration of sporadic music production? I get it. But guess what? I created a game-changing solution, the Producer Growth Scorecard. This free tool turns the inconsistency into an exciting game, correlating your score to releases. In just 6 weeks, it tripled my output. Ready for the magic? Grab your free scorecard at synthmusicmastering.com/free. Let's transform your music journey.
Almost everything. Yeah.
Oh wow,
Minus a
okay.
few like drum elements. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm that there. What I'm going to say to that is there is no hard and fast rule. I mean, if it sounds good, then
Right, the golden
go
rule.
with it, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. My computer screen just flicked off and it came back on again. That was very weird.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, that threw me right off. I thought I'd lost everything then. Began to panic.
Well, that's like a heart attack.
Yeah, it just went totally black. That was weird. But it's still recording, so that's good. So where was I going with that? Yeah. I was talking about there are no hard and fast rules when it comes to music. You know, if it sounds good and it adds to your track, then do it. I did notice in that track, you're sidechaining the guitars as well, I'm assuming then.
Yeah,
Is
pretty
that
much
right?
everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, my immediate response would be, once again, this is my own personal opinion, is that if I'm going to do that, I might vary the level of sidechain with the instruments. I don't know if they're all at the same level.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Right. This makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise you're just going to have that same level of pumping throughout the whole track, and if it's different for the different instruments, that could add a bit more interest throughout the track. That's going slightly off topic with regards to bass, but side chaining is good with bass. I mean, if you're side chaining bass, you're making room for that kick drum to come through. I mean, another way you could do it is if you've got, I don't know if you've ever used a multi-band compressor or you have access to one.
I have, and I don't have much experience with it, so I haven't really like been able, I haven't like really experimented with it enough. I'm still trying to figure out how to use it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. What I was going to say is, with a multi-band compressor, something like the Waves C6, others are available. You can pick out
Right.
the specific frequency of the kick drum and just duck that frequency notch in your bass. However, that's from a mixing perspective. So if you want your kick drum to come through, poke through your bass, that would work. But if you're doing it from like a creative perspective, so you've got that pumping, then I would just stick with the whole of the bass being sidechained, if that makes sense. I hope
Right,
it does.
right.
But one thing I would definitely look at doing is varying the levels of sidechain you've got going on with your instrument groups, just to make it a bit more interesting. I'm assuming you're sidechaining your synths as well.
Yeah,
That'd be
everything
right.
is going into that sucker.
Fantastic. Excellent. What about guitars? Are those VST guitars you've got going on there in that track?
Yeah, so like for the first track, like that included guitarist, which would be vivisection. At that point in time, I did not yet have. I believe at that point in time, I didn't have an audio interface, so I just used like a VST guitar coupled with a synth that I designed that I tried to emulate the sound of a guitar with. So it was like two
Ah,
layers, yeah, but it was not a
cool.
real guitar.
No, that's fine. What I was going to say is, have you double tracked that guitar? Is it just one guitar? Is it left and right?
I believe at that point in time it was not double tracked, it was just stereo because of the way that I designed the synth. It was just like stereoized.
I see. Well, one other
Yeah.
thing I was going to say is, this kind of plays into that low end again, is what you might want to consider doing. This is coming from my metal background now. So when I was playing
Oh.
metal, we would double track guitars. we might have even quadruple tracked. I know Metallica did it on the Black Album, but it depends on your overall mix and what you're going for. But double tracking guitars is a great idea. So you can have one hard pan left and one hard pan right. No, we did quadruple. No, it's double. So I did my guitars and the other guitarist did theirs. But what I would say is have on the left side, you have one guitar, and on the right, you have the other, but make them subtly different. So you might have a slight treble boost in the guitar on the right, or you might have a slight low end boost in the guitar on the left, or something along those lines. Because if they're the exact same when you pan them left and right, you'll hear this. There's an episode that goes out on Tuesday with Adrian Hall, and he says this: if you pan it hard left, hard right, and it's exactly the same, it kind of almost sums to mono, if that makes sense. So you want to have those sort of variations in sound left and right. And it's the same with synths as well. If you're hard panning synths left and right, I don't know if you do that with your pads, or do you have one pad down the middle, or is it just a stereo pad?
Pads. Usually when it comes to like my instrument arrangement, I tend to have different instruments in different parts of the stereo field. So I'd probably have like my pads more on the left and then like something else more on the right.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I mean, what I was going to say is it kind of falls in line with pads as well. So you're already doing that, which is great, where you have those different sounds, both left and right, because that will then enhance that stereo width that you have. So it's good that you're doing that already. But what I would say is, are you going to be tracking guitars? And are you a guitarist yourself?
Oh, yeah. Now I use real guitars in my songs.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Oh, no, yeah. I was just going to say that, like, I'm definitely keen to do like tracking and stuff. I think like you did give me feedback for my other track that other time about tracking, which I really appreciated, and like it really did give like a lot of life to the whole track as a whole. Yeah, so fantastic. It's definitely something I'm playing with a lot.
That's great to hear. So going back to the bass region, because I'm aware of time. So with the bass region that you have there. You have your bass, whether it's a synth, like an arpeggiated pattern or bass guitar or something like that. Is it just one bass, or are you layering bass sounds? And do you use a sub-bass sound as well?
Yeah, usually I will layer like a bass sound with a sub-bass, and then I'll cut out like the subs from the original bass.
Fantastic.
I'll have it like separate. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what my next question was going to be. So you're doing that already, which is great, because that's what I was going to say, is because otherwise you're just frequencies on top of frequencies, and then you're overloading that sort of frequency range there. So that's fantastic you're doing that. And then do you have any upper frequency content in your bass as well? And is it – actually, answer that one first. So your upper frequency content, do you have anything above sort of like the low mids, the high mids with your bass?
Typically, yes. I usually like – intentionally like induce higher frequencies with like distortion or things like that, just to like help it like pop out a bit. I don't know if that's how you're supposed to do with basses, but yeah.
No, once again, I was just intrigued to see or find out rather what you're doing in terms of your frequency content with bass up and down the spectrum. And it's one of those, once again, there are no rules, and it's kind of leads on what I was going to say next, is with regards to the stereo width in the low end. Anything below sort of 100 hertz, do you have it sort of like mono, or do you have some sort of stereo spread? Have you got bass in the stereo spread below sort of 100 hertz?
Yeah, I usually keep my bass, my low bass, like as mono as possible. Like my sub is fully mono, and that's usually it's about there, around like maybe 80 hertz and below is all mono. Not sure about 100. Maybe I should.
Yeah.
I probably should like keep that in mind next time. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, when I say 100, it's an arbitrary number. I was just picking one out of the air. So, I mean, 80, if 80 works for you, then stick with 80. But with regards to you, I know you mentioned earlier about saying that your bass, sometimes you don't think it's loud enough, or maybe it's too, and then you overcompensate in your next mix. It might be worth, once again, it goes back to saying there are no rules really, maybe trying what it sounds like with a slight stereo width in that low region. If you're thinking, actually, you know what, this bass really isn't kicking through in my sub bass, maybe not sub bass, but your lower, just try it. Just try it out. Just not obviously like hard left, hard right, but just add a bit of width to it and see what it does, because it might just help it open up a bit more. I always get them around the wrong way. It is a high pass filter. Do you high pass filter the low end, sort of like to get rid of any rumble? Is that something that you do in your mixing?
High passing, probably not. I also get this mixed up a lot. Where you cut away the highs, or you cut away the lows?
No, it's the one away. Yeah, I know. I always do it. I did a video last week, and I had to second guess myself. Is where you're only allowing the frequencies to the right come through. So if you put a high pass filter, hertz, anything above 20 hertz will come through.
Yeah, so I definitely do that for my basses. I do that for like most of my audios, of my instruments, actually.
And is that, are you using a shelf filter, or is that a high pass? Sorry.
High pass. Like, I completely cut out like the stuff that goes below. Also, not too sure if it's the right number, probably 80, probably higher.
Yeah. So what I was going to say to that is, this is something I learned from chatting with Mike Exeter, because I was of the mindset to do that myself as well. And it could also, when you find that your low end is lacking in your mix, it could be worth looking at that high pass filter and maybe switching it out for like a low shelf instead, which doesn't attenuate all the frequencies, but rather you could sort of attenuate, I don't know, at 100 hertz, you might attenuate 5 or 6 dB instead. That makes sense.
That's a really interesting idea.
Neither had I, because he put the point across was like that frequency, that sound is there for a reason, and when you send it to mastering, if there's nothing there, the mastering engineer hasn't got anything to work with. Now, it's not necessarily going to mix, or sorry it's not necessarily going to work with everything, but if you are finding that it's lacking anything, maybe just try switching it out and putting a low shelf in there instead, and then just ducking it rather than a high pass filter and getting rid of it altogether. I hope that makes sense. I think it does.
That does make sense, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
That does open up quite a few doors for me.
Brilliant. Well, Violet, I'm well aware that's 20 minutes in now, so I hope that's been of some use to you. I could chat about sort of mixing and all these bits and pieces all day, but I'm hoping that you can take something away from that there, from what I've said.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. And for our audience listening, if they want to go and find out and listen to your music, where could they find you online?
Right. Thanks so much for giving me this opportunity.
Not a problem.
If you'd like to find more of my music, you can find me at, like, I have this handy dandy link for everything. It's a link tree. So that's linktr.ee/VYLT music. No caps, no spaces. Or you can just search me up as VYLT or Violet. You'll probably find some of my pages somewhere.
Brilliant.
Thanks so much for having me on this episode.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you for joining me on this. I'll put a link in the episode notes so the audience can go and click on that Linktree link and check out your stuff as well. Once again, a big thanks. Not a problem. And folks, if you want to be like my friend here, Violet, and become a producer Kickstart participant, go to the website www.insidethemixpodcast.podia.com/free. And get signed up and come and join me on the show. We can chat about your music and much like we've done today. So, Violet, a big thank you. And thanks for joining me on this. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Hi, I'm Chewy. I go by Chewy Beats. And my favorite episode is 66 because it showed me a new approach of writing lyrics. And yeah, I'll try that in my next one.
Pump the brakes, folks. Don't forget to grab your producer growth scorecard before you leave. It's a handy tool that can help you improve as a producer and get your music out there faster. Plus, it's completely free, and you can download it at synthmusicmastering.com/free.